We only have 100 days left until the 2022 midterms, and we need to make every one count. We know how high the stakes are in these midterms. Abortion is on the ballot. Climate is on the ballot. Our basic freedoms and ability to make our voices heard to protect them are on the ballot. Head to votesaveamerica.com/midterms to take our Count Me In pledge, to volunteer the weekend of July 31st, and become part of our Midterm Madness program to get involved in the most important elections in 2022, from the Senate to your local school board. Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Jon Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vietor.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and welcome to the pod. We got all four of us here. On today's show, we're going to answer 2021's last round of mailbag questions, revisit 2020's New Year resolutions, and set some new ones for 2022, and present the second annual Pundi Awards for the absolute worst takes of 2021. Busy show, lots to do.
A lot going on here.
Very exciting.
We'll get to it.
When does this come out?
December.
Right.
What day?
Fucking idiot. Couple days before New Year's.
All right,
couple
cool.
days before New Year's.
Great.
That's Andy. Andy's nodding.
Leave it all in. I want everyone to know
this. Thank you, Andy, for being helpful.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with some of your questions. We want to do mostly fun questions, but because so many of you have asked about student loans and student debt, we will start there. Background. In March of 2020, the CARES Act paused all student loan repayments because of the pandemic. Payments were supposed to start again on September 30th, 2021, but Joe Biden extended the pause until January 31st, 2022. But last week, the White House said he's not extending it again, which means people will have to start repaying their loans in February. Separately, Biden still hasn't kept his campaign promise to cancel up to $10,000 in student debt for every borrower. Guys, what gives? What's going on?
I have a theory.
You have a theory. Tommy has a theory.
I mean, I think judging by Joe Biden's public statements, he thinks he's not a big fan of this proposal, even though he made it. I think he thinks it's overly weighted towards wealthier people who paid for college. I'm not saying that's accurate or the right way to look at it, but I think that's what he thinks. I've also just assumed that he wanted to get Build Back Better done first so that Joe Manchin wouldn't see the price tag on student loan debt relief and like start crying about it and like throw like a tantrum and bang his rattle on the ground of the Senate and then refuse to pass the bill. That's
so
my gut.
I think that's all right on the canceling debt. I want to separate the two. I want to start with the pause on the payments, because you could imagine the White House saying, you know what, the whole idea of pausing the repayments on the debt was about getting people through the pandemic. The pandemic is very much still with us. So instead of ending it at the end of January, we will continue to another 3 or 4 or 5 months. What do you think, Dan?
I am very confused by the politics of this, but there is this tension in their messaging, which is the economy, despite the short-term challenges of inflation, is doing great. Historic job creation, we save the economy. Also, we need these emergency measures at the same time. And I think that that is a place that they have found, I think, is a navigable piece of tension, but it is tension within their message.
I think that there's an obvious compromise, which is you continue to suspend payments for everyone except for people who have debt from an MBA, because I don't care about them.
I think that's a great proposal,
yeah.
Honestly.
What should happen? I think that they should obviously extend the pause for another couple months.
It's a no-brainer.
Look, if someone has a good reason.
Is there a court ruling that maybe made that hard?
That you think of the homeowners.
Ah, fuck.
Yeah, so this is what I'd love to know. Smart people out there, because I tried to look this up before the episode. If there is a legal reason for not being able to extend, or the Biden administration, or why the Biden administration thinks they shouldn't extend the pause, then let me know. But if there's no legal reason, then I don't think there is a good substantive reason or political reason, certainly, for not extending it. And then when you get to the canceling up to $10,000 in student debt for every borrower, I do think, Tommy, that's probably like, you know, let's give them until the Build Back Better passes on that one. And then once that passes, we don't know what the Education Department actually, it's supposed to be under review at the Education Department, whether Biden has the authority. Of course, we don't want them to get into the situation they got in with the housing extension the eviction moratorium, where Biden administration extended the eviction moratorium. Everyone celebrated, and the courts were like, absolutely not, fuck you. And so it did help some people for a month or so, but didn't give a lot of relief.
I see there's a double whammy here, because there are people who both are depending on the continued pause in student loan payments and depend on the expanded child tax credit. And both those things are going away this month. So there's going to be a section of the population who's going to get hit with a huge bill in January absent action.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my fear about waiting for BBB to pass is my dad used to have this New Yorker cartoon on his fridge where a guy was making plans and he said, how about never? Is never good for you? And I worry about that dynamic here.
Classic cartoon.
It's a classic. It's a real classic.
I do too. And look, a lot of people are angry about this, and I totally understand that. And people should keep pushing the Biden administration very hard on this. And people should keep making noise about it. Like, I think it's a totally fair criticism, and they have not talked a lot about it, and they should give people some answers as to why they can't do it, or else they should do it.
I mean, I think here's the other thing. I think extending the pause won't make him less popular.
Right.
There is that as well. All right. We will elegantly segue into the fun questions with this transition one. Joshua asks, would you rather go up against one large Kyrsten Sinema or 100 tiny Joe Manchins?
This is so easy.
Oh, well, okay.
Is it?
100 tiny Joe Manchins, because if there's like a tiny thing coming at you, you get to just drop kick them into oblivion.
I think people sometimes underestimate just how tiring it would be to take on 100 small enemies.
So like practice, join a club soccer team for a month or something.
I also just think having a conversation with one Joe Manchin clearly has exhausted dozens of Democratic senators. They literally seem completely out of juice. And I don't care how small your Joe Manchin is, the arguments are not going to get worse. You know what I mean? They're not going to get better. They're not going to get worse. It's just maybe a slightly higher pitch.
You got a pitch for Sinema, Dan?
Well, she has, I would say a couple things. One, Joe Manchin's, whether large or small, are easily distracted.
Right,
so it's just like, yell, no labels conference over there. They would all just leave you alone.
Sprinkle some coal.
Right. And Kyrsten Sinema has shown such a commitment to her physical fitness that she is willing to miss key Senate votes for it. So that would cause me some concern.
Yeah, you get caught with a thumbs down, you're done.
Also, if it's 100 Joe Manchins, does that mean he has all those votes? Then we'd be in real trouble.
I'm just making one of Kyrsten Sinema's outfits would mean there wouldn't be enough fabric for all the Chicos in the world. You know what I mean?
I don't.
Yeah, I think we have now officially exhausted the answer to this fun question. Jay Friesen.
That was for Andy. Andy.
Jay Friesen asks, as a Starbucks barista, I'm curious to know, what's your everyday coffee order and what's your treat yourself coffee order?
Thank you for asking. I'll go first. it's just sort of a classic all-American drink. No big deal. Triple espresso and extra ice with 3 pumps sugar-free vanilla and a splash of half and half.
I will read you mine because I have it in front of me right now. It's a venti Americano, a splash of cream, 5 pumps of sugar-free vanilla, and 2 Splenda.
Jesus Christ.
It's a venti. It's a venti.
I just want to say,
are you in the movie Elf? That's disgusting.
Some of the worst moments of my life have either been A, early mornings in Penn Station, or B, getting coffee for you and having to fucking say 5 pumps of skinny vanilla latte out loud.
Well, do you want to know my treat yourself?
Why? What is it about your masculinity?
It's disgusting. It's not my masculinity.
What is it about makes you comfortable?
Why do you go to a gendered place on this question? Can't it just be disgusting tasting? How dare you?
Why don't you want to say it?
Vanilla's delicious.
Is it BetterHelp ad?
Vanilla's delicious. My treat yourself coffee order is from Dunkin' Donuts. It's a large Dunkin' with just a French vanilla Dunkin' with even need sugar in that.
Well,
because
so
that you think sugar-free vanilla syrup in Starbucks is bad? Just wait till you get to French vanilla Dunkin' Donuts. That's the good shit. That's
you can
the good
smell
shit right
that
there.
Shit 100 miles away.
It's like benzene. It's gross. I will say what's really pathetic is my treat version of that drink. It's just one extra pump of sugar-free vanilla. That's the level. It's so dark.
Tommy and Dan,
shout out Jeremy, my
your barista
bell.
Friend. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really go out to coffee anymore because you guys know why. But back in the day when I was painting houses, the best tree drink was the extra large Dunkin' iced with like an inch of sugar at the bottom and extra cream.
Cool, Dan.
In a weird way, I only started drinking coffee 5 years ago. So after I left the White House.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
What were you drinking in the White House in the morning?
Well, I was drinking diet soda, which is fucking disgusting and may have contributed to at least one trip to the hospital.
Yeah, that's true.
Good flag.
I only drink basically plain black coffee. It's just caffeine. It is flavored caffeine. It has no, if I'm treating myself, I'm not doing it with coffee.
Alexa asks, thoughts on the Succession finale? It was sort of in line with your guesses for who would actually succeed. That's right. Dan and I talked about this on the pod.
Well, first of all, spoiler.
A little bit forward.
Right. Stop the pod, throw your phone out the window.
We're recording Pod Save the World, and Ben's just like, how would you think of the scene when Kendall's floating? Think he's dead? It was like,
very bad. Who wants to go? Who wants to start? I thought it was exquisite.
Oh, wow. More DVs often exquisite.
Yeah. And just was searching for one that would really get there.
I'll say this. First of all, I loved it. Second, I am glad that there was a bit of a Jeremy Strong discourse before the finale, because I have never felt more convicted of, in my view, that whole thing was a bunch of bullshit. Jeremy Strong is great. I'm glad he does weird shit like ask for personal props to help him get into character. This town is filled with people who don't give a fuck, who are cynical and are doing it for the paycheck.
About their art.
But not Jeremy Strong. Jeremy Strong showing up on days when he's not in the scene to cry at funerals he is not supposed to attend. That fucking rules. Jeremy Strong rules. I won't hear a bad word about him. Oh, he cares too much. Is that our problem as a culture?
Yeah, that's not our problem.
We need more Jeremy Strongs in Congress.
The scene when they were sitting...
Maybe we wouldn't have so many problems.
The scene when they're sitting on the ground and... he goes from disclosing that he murdered someone to them making fun of it is one of the best moments of TV. I do wonder, okay, we've done several seasons of this now. How do we sustain this show in another season? I'm a little anxious about it on their behalf.
I feel like four seasons you can definitely do. I'm wondering about five, because now I think season four is either the kids maintain their alliance that they just started against Logan, or that alliance falls apart because they're all assholes like within the first couple episodes. But either you could see either happening.
I will go with these people wherever they want me to go.
Me too.
I will sit with them. There could be a whole season where they just go to some sort of like retreat vacation spot and argue for a week. Yeah. I don't care. I'm in.
The one thing about this season that I was worried about is I love when they just go to like rich people places, and you know, it's just like when they're
so
like
sumptuous.
We're gonna go to Italy Cuomo, and now we're gonna go to Lake Cuomo. I guess it was Lake Cuomo, and now we're going to Switzerland. Like that the season was missing that until the end. I was really happy about that. Dan, go ahead.
Love the show. One thing I give two shits about: who eventually takes over the dying right wing cable company. Do not care, right? It's not
agreed.
not like reading totally the tea agree. Leaves to figure that out. Like, if they want to keep it on for 20 years, we just get to hang out with these people and, like you said, go to fun places where they make fun of each other. Great, I'm in.
When I was working on the newsroom, I said something that made Aaron Sorkin so upset, which was...
I want to be the first to inform you that we killed Osama bin Laden.
That was my thing. I was like, hey, what if they're on a plane and they have to tell people that Osama bin Laden was killed? But
what if you played Fix You towards
sorry,
the
end? Sorry.
No, but I... we were having some sort of debate about what the show was going to do, and it was like a very high drama debate about what they were going to air on the Jeff Daniels program on their network, and everybody and like it was going to be heated, and it was going to be this like debate about the future of the news. And I was like, hey, I just want to remind everybody that in this world, what we're talking about here is the opportunity to make a really great episode of Rachel Maddow. So maybe we should just chill out a little bit. Like, that's what this is about. And I love Rachel Maddow, but like, let's, I don't know how dramatic this music needs to be.
You didn't exactly Jeremy Barr that episode. Jeremy Strong. Shit. Fuck.
One more television related follow up here from Josephine. How excited is Tommy for season two of Emily in Paris?
Pretend look, you won't be.
I realize I did this to myself. I just want to clarify that I thought the show was, it was like a B, it was a B minus. It entertained mm-hmm. me. It didn't challenge me in any way. There are barely conflicts to resolve.
Tommy.
So I will probably watch it. And you guys.
I will probably watch it. You like the show. You enjoy
pandemic.
The show.
There was a pandemic.
You okay. like it. You will watch it more.
So we just came from a period of outstanding television, and I've been out of television to watch. So Emily agreed. I started Emily in Paris because I had missed it the first time. And Emily's like, okay, I'll watch it again. And we got a couple episodes in and we're like, can't do it.
And I want to thank the producers of Emily in Paris for sending us all bucket hats, by the way.
That was
really
weird.
Appreciate
they
that.
Were great bucket hats.
Listen, it's better than the fucking Sex and the City reboot.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's just
that's an unholy text.
It's just absolutely terrible.
That's like that show is terrible. Like someone wished on a genie, but broke the rules and brought something back from the dead, you know? It was like, could this get worse than when they went to Abu Dhabi?
Sure could.
Sure can.
Wendy asks, what do you really, really want for Christmas that isn't connected to politics?
Nothing. I'm at the age where I ask for nothing. My wife gave me a laptop bag. I'm happy about it. I mean, I probably should buy a new sweatshirt since you see me in the same shit 5 times a week.
What kind of laptop bag?
Is that the one you had yesterday?
Yeah, it's in the
bag. I'll get it.
Yeah.
I got Ronan a new bag. That was I did some comparison shopping.
I think it's Filson around. Maybe. I don't know.
Dan, what do you want?
Nothing.
We're so boring.
You hit an age and you just don't ask for things.
You know what I ask for is a Kindle, because
I love my Kindle.
Reading books on the iPad doesn't work so well on the distraction front.
No,
so basically,
a lot of other things are happening on that.
If you want to read more books, you need a Kindle and then some kind of a surgery.
New personality.
sever your corpus callosum or something.
We'll see if it works. We'll see if it works. Tune in next year.
Tough but fair.
Tune into next year's mailbag. Libby Lee on Instagram asks, what is a Christmas movie you never get sick of?
Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
That's a good one.
I know almost every line to National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I haven't watched it. You watched it already?
It was on. Yeah, I put it on last night.
Usually I watch it with my dad and brother, who are huge fans as well. So one of my favorites.
Give us some lines.
I'm also. if we could just cut in the audio of Randy Quaid saying the shitter is full here, that would be great. Yeah, unless we're going to get sued for that. Rebecca asks, "What's your favorite holiday memory from the White House?"
I guess mine was probably Obama used to do this staff dinner every year. It was like the last day before he would go to Hawaii, and it was always like a really, really nice, wonderful event. But I think probably the second to last year I was in the White House, I took my mom, which was like the greatest thing that ever happened to her. Joe Biden, Delaware, bonded with her over Delaware, talked to her for like 45 consecutive minutes. It was very fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get invited to some fucking staff dinner, but the White House threw like 100 amazing Christmas parties for the plebs.
Yep.
And I invited my mom to one of the pleb fests. And I would say, joking aside, I think going to any event in the like state dining room is like an unbelievably heady, cool experience, and it blew her mind. But then I walked her over through the colonnade to my office in the lower press office. Then we walked up to the Oval Office. We ran into Katie Johnson, who's our friend, who was Obama's secretary at the time. Obama hears us out there, calls us into the Oval, takes a picture, hung out with my mom for a minute. And I think it's just one of the things he got, I think, intuitively about the job is that 30 seconds of just basic decency to any human being can be one of the coolest moments of their life. And that's what happened there.
That's so nice.
That's nice.
We have a nice photo of it.
I had a sort of embarrassing one, which is when in one of those staff dinners, they always have like a special guest, and they had the Rockettes come. And somehow I got in a picture with Alyssa and all of the Rockettes, in which I was kicking my leg up, as was Alyssa.
Where is that picture?
Alyssa has it. So
Alyssa, tweet it.
I think she's posted it on Instagram before.
It's happened a couple times.
It's also me when I shaved my head and was like 10 pounds heavier. It's not great. It's not a great picture.
It's your second worst picture.
Third? I think it's third. I think we got two ahead.
Hey, leave me out of this.
That was such a all weird right. dinner, because it was Rockettes, John Bon Jovi playing Christmas music, and then Will Ferrell reading The Night Before Christmas.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's
he made cool. no jokes. Did it no s- jokes. Straight from it's the
very
text.
Very serious reading. Alexandra asks, favorite Christmas Eve dish and or cocktail? Old fashioned for me. Love an old fashioned around Christmas.
I'm a wine guy, mostly around the holidays. Food-wise, my mom makes this appetizer where she mixes cream cheese with this sort of like curry powder or something, and then puts chutney and like chopped green onions on top and you eat it.
Oh, so his favorite meal before Christmas is cultural appropriation.
It's the waspiest thing. I was going to say it's pretty waspy, but I guess you're right.
Wow.
Dan?
Cocktail used to be old-fashioned, but I have transitioned to paper planes, and so...
Oh, those are good.
Yeah.
I had one of those recently.
Offshoot of the old fashioned.
Yeah, any kind of bourbon based drink I'm a fan of.
Found a picture of Alyssa and Dan. Dan is asleep in the car next to her. It's on the Instagram here. Sorry.
Good stuff. All right. We got a lot of these. What video game is Lovett looking forward to most?
That's easy. Early 2022, I believe February. Elden Ring.
What's that?
From the twisted minds of Dark Souls. And Bloodborne, and George R.R. Martin collaborating together. Miyazaki, George R.R. Martin together creating Elden Ring. I cannot wait.
It's like you're, you're just speaking a different language.
So I feel very left out.
I'm like, Mario 2, Mario 3?
No, no.
What Mario are we on?
When do we get those
here's
mushrooms?
The thing. If you're hearing this, all right.
Zelda's still kicking?
If you're a Soulsborne person, all right, if you understand what I'm talking about, you know how exciting it is. Then in February of next year, we get a George R.R. Martin Miyazaki collab.
You sure he finished it?
Cannot. I think this is yet another example of what he's done to procrastinate finishing those books. And you know what? I don't give a fuck about those books anymore.
Yeah, you know.
I found out how that story ends and it's just okay. But Elden Ring, yes! Elden Ring. Dark Souls. The games for the true gamers. Charlotte knows what I'm talking about. Charlotte knows. You like Soulsborne?
Yeah, but I'm not very good at them.
But no one is. No, they're really hard.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Cool.
Cool. Elden well, Ring. Stay tuned.
Cannot wait. You will not hear from me that weekend.
NHLPA 94.
NBA Jam 45. Is that where we're at now?
All right. Tech Mobile.
Multiple asks for book recommendations. Dan and Tommy, you guys can take this one. Love
you know
it
what?
Doesn't
don't
read.
Don't. I no, do you're fucking go, read.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I do read.
Yeah, no, right.
All right. You Clara and the Sun. Clara and the Sun. You go.
Dan, you go first.
Two books. One, Harlem Shuffle by Colson Whitehead. And Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. Both are sort of very, very well done crime novels.
Is the Colson Whitehead one new? I read, was it Nickel Boys?
Yeah, it came out this year.
That was very good. Very dark, but very good. I was late on this, but I read The Sympathizer this year, I believe. It's as good as everyone said it was. It takes like 50 pages to get into because there's whatever. I'm reading Age of Ambition by Evan Osnos about his time living in China. It's very good. I have a couple books that I'm just like constantly slogging through. A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking and then Reaganland by Rick Perlstein. You guys have heard me talk about Rick before. Basically what happens is I usually just get, you know, a little too high before bed and then I kind of toggle between whichever book my brain is sort of tuned to, which frequency. You
know, read about the Reagan era while a little stoned.
I took an edible and read Nixonland. I think he wasn't very good.
No, he's bad. Yeah, that's what I took away. That's about all I got. I'm going to read Heather McGee's book, The Sum of Us, is downloaded.
It's a good
I downloaded
book.
Some books
Great
about
book.
AI because I feel like we talk about it and I should know what it is, but I haven't read them yet.
Wow, good stuff. You guys, knowing my tastes, and I want to read a book over the next couple weeks.
What do you got?
Will you guys have a recommendation for me?
Everybody,
what are you looking for? Fiction, nonfiction?
Fiction. I'm looking for fiction, and I kind of like
maybe start small, like
light fiction. Like I don't need something so heavy. I need something that's like
graphic
a little
novel.
More fun.
Something, just something to get you in the habit. Get you into the habit. There's somebody who said anyway. Something about AI, and I'm going to bastardize it, but it's something like AI is just a term for the next generation of computing that we don't have yet.
Yeah.
That like, oh, that's not AI. AI is this next thing. Artificial intelligence is the next thing. And then we have a, like, in the movie Mission Impossible, Ving Rhames is like, I need some of those Pentium 5s, thinking machines. And it's like, Pentium 5s, like, those are garbage to us.
Yeah, that's just product.
AI is just a word for, like, a computer that's a little better than the computers we have now. I wonder how true that is. Mm. I don't know.
Elon Musk might disagree.
John, Clara and the Sun, John.
I Googled.
Clara and the Sun.
What is it?
Best fiction.
Clara and the Sun.
Clara and the Sun?
It's by Ishiguro, who's my favorite author.
Okay.
Beautiful story. It's an easy read.
Great. Okay. I'm going to check it out. Thank you. When we come back, we will talk New Year's resolutions.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Game day starts before kickoff. Get ready for the big game with help from Menards. Find great deals on sofas and recliners to keep guests comfortable all game long. Score big savings and stock up on game day goodies. Shop a variety of snacks and drinks to keep your party fueled up. Make Menards a part of your game plan. Shop in-store or on Menards.com and save big money.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Game day starts before kickoff. Get ready for the big game with help from Menards. Find great deals on sofas and recliners to keep guests comfortable all game long. Score big savings and stock up on game day goodies. Shop a variety of snacks and drinks to keep your party fueled up. Make Menards a part of your game plan. Shop in-store or on Menards.com and save big money.
Save big money at Menards.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, let's finish 2021 with the worst takes of the year. And our second annual edition of Pod Save America's Pundi Awards, as Cricket Media's chief take officer Elijah Cohn says, defend your takes like they're your family, because at the end of the day, your takes are all that you have. It's just all right. Let's who has a nomination for a really bad take for 2021? Who wants to start? Tommy's chomping at the bit.
I got one right here.
There's the normal stuff the presidents are required to talk about, like, oh, the so-and-so of Finland is coming today, or Tennessee has somehow tricked us into announcing our new Asia strategy this week. We gotta talk about that, right? So, like all that other stuff. It has importance in the world, I guess.
Dan Pfeiffer to Asia. You have importance, I guess.
What I like about that is also Tommy to Dan Pfeiffer, I listen to you at 1.5 speed if you're lucky.
Of course, yeah. You're just psycho if you listen to one.
Dan is not pivoting to Asia. There is no Asia strategy for Dan.
No, I stand by that take, America first.
Bad take from Dan coming in right under the wire. That was a yesterday take on Pod Save America.
I'll do two of my own bad takes. Okay. Are you ready? Bad take number one. We should just give Joe Manchin whatever he wants. Just, you know what? He doesn't care about the country. He doesn't care about Democrats winning. He doesn't care about helping people. He has all the fucking leverage. So just give in. I know we're not supposed to negotiate with terrorists, but that's just something you say before you figure out how to get them the money to get your aunt out. You know what I mean? Like, this is the whole "we don't negotiate with terrorists" thing is a rule that
total
exists
bullshit
to be broken by people negotiating and paying fucking terrorists.
That's right.
So what's the bad take?
Some realism right there.
That is it. If you, I'm calling it a bad take to protect myself from the internet because it's my take. It's like, how long are we going to fucking do this? This connects to my second bad take, which is we got to get Build Back Better done, because going to voting rights without first doing Build Back Better is like a plan to make sure Republicans win fair and square.
Can I build off of that?
Sure.
Here's a bad take. This is a headline from Nick Kristof on May 1st, 2021. Joe Biden is electrifying America like FDR.
Oh.
Now, that could end up being true.
Incomplete.
It was a touch.
Incomplete.
It was a touch premature. And I think that speaks to an expectations management problem that has become challenging for the administration. Again, I love Joe Biden. I think he's doing well. But that's tough.
Dan, do you have a take that you want to
I have a couple of takes. One, anything and everything Chuck Schumer ever said about time.
That's good. The man doesn't own a watch, clearly.
My other one is, one version of this is from The Guardian, but everyone else did it. How Trump not being on Twitter is cramping his style. Turns out, doesn't need to be on Twitter. Fact, we may want him back on Twitter.
That's a hot take right there. Get Trump back on Twitter.
I got to say, I'm loving the turnaround. Once again, you know, look, I've taken shit for this in the past. I'm glad that Dan Pfeiffer's official position is Vice President Kamala Harris.
Oh, my God.
Just damaged our political prospects by fighting so hard to get Trump off of Twitter. That's Dan's view. It's not mine. I just respect such an intense and hot take.
Wow. I got one. Politico, March 18th. 2021, how Ron DeSantis won the pandemic.
Oh, of course.
Which reads,
really
quote,
good.
After 12 months in which he was pilloried as a reckless executive driven more by ideology than science, Florida has fared no worse and in some ways better than many other states. And now here's the Associated Press in September, just a couple months later. Florida now has the 11th worst per capita death rate among the 50 states, with about 1 in 400 Florida residents dying from COVID. That's how we won the pandemic right there, guys.
Last seen passing the Stop Woke Act or whatever the fuck thing he did yesterday.
Oh, my God.
He's a terrible governor.
Also seen leading every poll for the Republican nomination that doesn't include Trump.
Yeah, it's tough. This one's from 2020, but I want to grandfather it in if so ordered.
That's fair.
Okay. There will be no Trump coup, a final pre-election case for understanding the president as a noisy weakling, not a budding autocrat. This is from October 10th, 2020 by Ross Douthat.
Come on, Ross. Come on.
Didn't nail that one.
I got one similar to that from the LA Times.
I'm print that out and storm the Times Bureau.
This is from early 2021. This is from David Lauter. Trump's sway over Republican Party fades as end of his term nears. A Senate vote against Trump remains uncertain. What is clear is that the events of the last week have done what four previous years could not: break Trump's unquestioned hold over a party that he once conquered but no longer controls. His future now depends on how rapidly his decline accelerates. He has less than a week left. Wish it were true. Wish that one were true.
There was a fleeting moment where it could have been true. There was that one week.
Well, so this isn't a bad take. I don't fault the Jonathan Martin and Maggie Haberman for this. But this was a lead of the New York Times in early January after the insurrection. Senator Mitch McConnell has told associates that he believes President Trump committed impeachable offenses and that he's pleased that Democrats are moving to impeach him, believing it will make it easier to purge him from the party, according to people familiar with this thinking. At the same time, Representative Kevin McCarthy of California has asked other Republicans whether he should call on Mr. Trump to resign in the aftermath of the riot at the Capitol last week, according to three Republican officials. You had McConnell and McCarthy telling people he should be impeached, we're going to call on him to resign, and now look where we are today.
Yeah, even it seems as well. Look, Kevin McCarthy is just as much a spine. I mean, just one of the most despicable and craven and sad figures in all of history, right? And so, like, he even at that moment read his own party wrong. Even he thought at that moment that argument was true. For a one fleeting moment, they actually didn't understand just how authoritarian the base had become.
Like, yep.
Just how lost the base was.
Dan, you got any others? Anyone else got any other bad takes they want to?
Anything I said that was hopeful?
Yeah. Jeez.
Tough.
No, that's hard.
Yeah, I have a personal one that I don't think I said publicly because we're not in the predictions business, but you guys all heard it. I was very sure that we would win Virginia. And the reason that I was sure we were in Virginia is not because I thought Terry McAuliffe was a dynamite candidate, but because I was like, look, this is a plus 10 state. And, you know, the partisan lean of a state and the demographics of a state should tell you like 90% of where this state is headed in any given election. And boy, was that fucking wrong.
Yeah, I do think one like take problem on our side is I think correctly, we have focused on like the assaults on democracy. We're seeing it at every level, gerrymandering, vote suppression. All of that is true. But right now, even if those weren't issues, we have another bigger problem, which is we are on track to lose right down the middle, fair and square. Republicans are more popular than Democrats right now. And I think we don't spend enough time worrying about that.
No voter restrictions or gerrymandering problem in a statewide election in Virginia.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I got one. Quote, yeah, I've been immunized. That was from Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. And but what he meant by immunized was like, I don't know, rubbing himself with quartz crystals and like juniper oil or some shit.
Oil, yeah.
Because, but then he got really haughty about it and said he was in the crosshairs of the woke mob. But before the final nail gets put in my cancel culture casket, I'd like to set the record straight. And then he went on to lie more.
I guess he's getting his casket ready because he's not vaccinated.
And he's now only trailing DeSantis in polls for the 2024 Republican nomination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of vaccination bad takes, New York Times editorial board in late September, this is no way to end a pandemic, an entire editorial attacking Biden for proposing boosters for all. It's another headline, how the confusing booster shot debacle aligns Biden with Trump's pandemic response. That's Zach Brennan at Endpoint News. And here's the thing. You look at experts and like, you know, Zeynep Tufekci and some other people were talking about this. In July, it was unclear whether boosters were. In July, it was still unclear with the evidence. Mm-hmm. By September, when Biden announced boosters for all, it was crystal clear. The evidence was crystal clear that boosters for all made sense. And instead, some journalists at a lot of major publications, including the New York Times, went to find the minority of doctors and scientists that didn't agree and lifted up their voices.
The
bullshit.
I will say this. I am more angry. Those journalists, fine. Like, there's been a kind of skittishness that's in all of the coverage, especially because, look, we did go through a terrible pandemic. It was the worst case scenario. I get not wanting to be rosy in the event that things don't go as we hope, but I will never forgive the way that the members of that FDA panel handled the booster shot.
Can I write down can I read a resolution I wrote
down?
Yeah,
let's
say?
Do it.
I want my friend John to go back to having annoyingly detailed knowledge of polling and not of COVID variant incubation periods. I want you to go back to
being
polling.
I'm just trying to help.
Yeah. Well, what I meant by that is I want everything to go away and everyone's fine.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I need to have less of that too. Hopefully the pandemic will end and so I won't have to think about this anymore.
Plus or minus three variants.
Anyone get anything else? Here's any note that they want to end on?
I'm just waiting for Omicron to take me. Take me now, Omicron.
Yeah, I had a Tucker Carlson quote praising Alex Jones. You know, called him a far better guide to reality than journalists at NBC News, Kendall Anian and Margaret Brennan. But I think that's a self-evidently garbage take.
One category of takes that I think I will allow me to end on an optimistic note is like there's a kind of brand of think piece now that's like, we're never going back to normal.
Ugh.
I'm never going to take my fucking
mask off. Atlantic.
Yeah, you're calling it The Atlantic is what you're referencing.
Well, there have been several, but that is the most recent. And I have to say, you can take these fucking despairing pieces and just shove them deep, 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 deep within your...
This is your uplifting close?
Your fucking butts, because we're going to go back to normal. I don't care what you people say.
Well, you know what? Like when I talked to Vivek Murthy about this for Offline, he was like, look, I cannot tell you when the pandemic is going to end, but I can tell you with confidence that we are going to find ways to live with this virus where you can participate in life, see your family and friends, work, do the things that you love. Like, that's going to happen. So
regular
you should not worry
boosters,
about that. And I thought that was a good way to put
it. But like regular boosters plus this fucking Pfizer pill, like you see the path out and everyone needs to like get comfortable with the path out. And like, the part of this is also political because like, man, if the Democratic Party is the party of like, everybody be careful, the pandemic's not over, like next summer, like maybe we don't even need a House of Representatives anymore.
Jesus, am I at a big pharma retreat? Stop eating nightshades. You guys will be fine. Enough of
nightshades.
This ridiculous vaccine propaganda nonsense.
Yeah.
Is Pfizer paying you?
No, actually. Unfortunately, they won't reply to my emails. I keep trying to get on the board with Scott Gottlieb. Scott, is there a space for me on this Pfizer board? These people are amazing.
Am I? Does this get me a booster faster?
Yeah, what does it get you?
Yeah, I want to. I'm like an acupuncturist now. I got three Pfizers. I'm gonna get some Moderna for the fucking thing too. Moderna. And honestly, I'm not even scared of J&J. Throw some J&J in there. I don't care.
What?
I'll get that.
Use it as Kinlay.
I'll get Sinovac.
Yeah. What's the Russian one? Like Sputnik.
Sputnik.
Yeah,
give me
none of them work anymore. So it's all Pfizer and Moderna from here on
out. Remember when Putin rolled their vaccine out like 4 months early and everyone's like, wow, it's exciting news. Like, I don't think they did trials, guys.
Anyway, is this where we want to end?
I guess so.
Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I think
it was just a little radio they threw in a space just to get ahead of us. Little lesson.
Everyone have a very safe and happy New Year. And be careful out there. And we'll talk to you in January. We'll be back.
You bet.
Bye, everyone.
Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. The executive producer is Michael Martinez. Our senior producer is Andy Gardner Bernstein. Our producer is Haley Muse, and Olivia Martinez is our associate producer. It's mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to Tanya Sominator, Sandy Gerard, Hallie Kiefer, Madison Hallman, and Justine Howe for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Phoebe Bradford, Milo Kim, and Amelia Montooth. Our episodes are uploaded as videos at youtube.com/crookedmedia.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.